Hello again. Energy companies like Shell and BP recording bumper profits will hardly come as a surprise in an era when gas, fuel and electricity prices have skyrocketed for households. And bad and all as things are, they probably would be worse without the energy credit provided by government, one that is due to run out. And we'll get to those bumper profits in a moment, Jack. But the energy credit, does it look politically tenable to scrap it, or are we looking at a renewal?
I think that we're looking at a renewal if energy costs stay high. I think that that's basically the compact that the government has explicitly or implicitly struck with households, which is that, like, if we face into another winter of these nosebleed retail energy prices that will push people to the pin of their collar and force that awful choice between heating and eating, then they will, to an extent, backstop households. I don't think it'll happen sooner rather than later, though. I suspect that this tranche that we had across the winter and into the springtime, the last of which is going to come through in March, will be the last. I don't think they're going to announce more to run over summer, just because I don't think it makes sense in a lot of ways to do it when outside of the winter heating kind of season. But, like, unless there is a significant drop, and I don't mean a leveling off at the current high level, unless there is actually deflation really in retail energy prices, I think that, you know, they've established this doctrine and they're going to have to go back to the well.
As they have
windfall taxes, be they from energy companies or corporation tax more generally, they cannot make the argument one year that they have to deploy them to help households and then the next year say that doesn't apply anymore.
And the levelling off that you mentioned is in the wholesale price of energy, which does not necessarily translate into a drop in household energy costs either. Because
certainly
of the forward
anyway.
Buying that some of the energy companies would have been involved in.
Exactly. And so they would have been entering into potentially these forward purchase agreements with gas wholesalers and extractors of gas back at the tail end of last summer, early on during the autumn, when we had these enormous spikes that spiked towards the end of August in wholesale prices. So it will take them a while to unwind those positions as well, I suspect. And you know, when you talk to people in government, and I think Eamon Ryan has said this publicly, he expects those higher utility bills to be with us for a couple of years, was his first assessment. I think he may have downgraded that to a good few months. But I suppose the point is that we're kind of stuck, I think, on this high plateau. I don't see us going back into reverse anytime soon. Not substantially to the pre-war position anyway.
Lynn Boylan, and it turns out households have also had an extra bump in their bill. As you were looking at some of the figures there, the households have been subsidising industrial customers as well.
Yeah, so for the last 12 years, the network tariff was designed in such a way that domestic households were subsidising the electricity bills of large energy users like the data centres and pharmaceutical companies. It was said at the time, I think Minister Ryan in the Dáil claimed it was an emergency measure to protect jobs. The government memo, which I got through FOI, clearly said it was intended to be a permanent measure on the back of industry. We're asking for this for a number of years. But even if it was an emergency measure, it continued for 12 years. And I think a lot of people are very annoyed and have stopped me on the street to say, when are we getting that money back?
Yeah, payback time, is it?
Well, it just seems, it's like when we were, what we started with earlier on in the conversation, when the state makes decisions, it seems to always be to the detriment of the little person. So, like, this subvention to large energy users, the PSO, is designed so that domestic households also subsidise large energy users. The regulator says they can't do anything about standing charges, but the government won't give them the powers to do anything about standing charges. So there's a whole range of things that could be done to reduce the cost of energy for people, not just in this crisis with the gas wholesale prices, but long term. And they're not making those decisions.
Michael Healy-Ray, in terms of the cost of energy and the government energy credit, how long more would you like to see it extended for? Presumably you do support its extension.
Of course I would. I have to listen to Dan Horan. Dan Horan operates in County Kerry fruit and vegetable and health food stores. He came out recently and said that if something didn't happen soon, we would be faced with a raft of small shop closures. Now, I can understand that very much because I have to declare I own a small shop. And I'm going to give you, when it comes to particular details, you can't talk about other people's business, but I can quite freely tell you my own. My bill every 62 days was 1,500 to 2,000 euros every 62 days.
Pre-crisis.
Pre-crisis. And I was able to sustain that. I was able to pay it. My last bill was 12,300 euros for 62 days. Now, that's a small shop. And yes, there's refrigeration and there's heating and there's all that sort of thing. But why I'm talking about that is because that's an example of what every other small shop in the country is going through at present. And I can just tell you, it is unsustainable. It's not possible to keep paying out that. And you have to have the lights on. You have to keep the door open if you're going to stay in business. But so if I'm struggling like that, and if that's what's happening to small business, there's a real danger of the only people who will be left standing at the end of this will be the bigger multinationals and the big people and again, all the small jobs in the small areas will go.
Is it an argument for accelerating away from dependence on fossil fuels? I'm trying to, with more wave, wind, solar, whatever
else. I'm absolutely delighted to ask that question, and I'll tell you why.
The capital of wind,
I can't understand for the life of me why government haven't been more anxious about ensuring that we would, if you look at farm buildings and every house, I can't actually see any reason in the world why we shouldn't have solar panels on every roof in the country. I can't understand why we're not doing that. Because if we were to do so, not only would it reduce the people's ESP bills for themselves, but they'd be able to feed into the grid and have an income off of it.
Right.
And it's madness that we're not pursuing that.
Paid for by a state scheme, subsidised by a state scheme.
Subsidise it, because people, it would be an investment by business and by private individuals in their futures if they want to have solar panels. And it's an absolute no-brainer.
We have a scheme through the SAI for community buildings for schools, and schools are 100% grant aided actually. And obviously then there's the scheme for farmers, which they can actually apply under TAMS, where they can avail of up to 60% grant towards installation of solar panels on their farms. And they can then sell back into the grid under the new TAM scheme, new entrance into TAM. So that's a really important. And I tell you, Michael, farmers, they're up for this, because my office gets contacted so many times about this particular
scheme. Before you
blow
it up too much now, and I don't want to pull the rug out from underneath you, but by the way you're talking, it's very easy to know you didn't apply for it. I've looked into this very closely, not on my own behalf, but on behalf of other people's businesses, right? And it actually is not viable for a person in a business, in a small business, to apply for the grant, because the rigmarole and the length of time it will take, it's one of those grants that it's set up at present in such a way it's not attractive for you to get it. I'm not talking about the farming side of it, I'm talking about the business side of it. And again, then when it comes back to the dwelling house, to the person in the home, their own home, again, it's not attractive enough for them to do so. To apply for the grant. So I welcome the government going back and looking at it and trying to expand on it.
It's one of the more affordable forms of renewable energy. And the payback, for example, we talked about farming there, they expect that farmers will get a payback within 2 to 3 years. So it makes it one of the forms of renewable energy that pays back over the shortest period of time. So I'd certainly, I know Michael, I wouldn't be as discouraging about it. I'd urge farmers to look at it.
I'm not discouraging people. I'm asking government to improve it. I'm not saying I don't want people to do what I said. I want to see every roof in the country having solar panels on it. That's what I said.
Lynn Boylan, in terms of the policy prescription of your party, the farmers were mentioned there. What would you like to see in terms of greater land use by farmers for solar or the incentivization of building wind farms? What's the solution there if we are to translate or transition away from fossil fuel energy?
Well, I suppose with the solar panels on household roofs and on farm buildings and microgeneration, there are still electricity companies that are not paying people for the electricity they're feeding into the grid. My own colleague Brian Stanley brought legislation 5 years ago. It's still now only been implemented by the government. But it is difficult for farmers to get access to the larger scale solar wind options. And I think there are issues around connections to the grid. There's issues around changing the legislation for direct lines so that they can bypass the grid. So all of that needs to be speeded up. I think I agree with Christopher. I think farmers are up for this. They also, we've seen the backlash against the Quilcha Vulture Fund when it comes to forestry. Farmers want to be part of the forestry programme, but they've been burnt in the past.
They reject the description as a vulture fund. They say a vulture fund comes in and buys distressed assets, whereas the fund, Gresham House, that's partnering with Quilcha, comes in and buys land at market value. They dispute the characterisation as a vulture fund for their own part. Very briefly, Jack, the energy majors we mentioned at the top, run us through some of the eye-watering numbers there so people can get an idea of exactly.
Two of the ones that really jumped out in the last week or so are two of the kind of big global conglomerates. That's BP, British Petroleum, with profits last year of 27.2 billion and Shell with profits of 40 billion. And that's being replicated as well on a local level as well. You do see significant profits accruing to the Irish utilities, and that leads to more discussions around how the government is going to structure interventions like that windfall profit tax, because at the end of the day, I don't think it's necessarily politically sustainable, at least domestically, for those profits.
And can it be done? Where are those companies located for the purposes of taxation on profits? Is that a can those kind of eye-watering numbers be taxed to the benefit of Ireland?
Your BPs and your Shells, I'd imagine, are located in rather sunnier, more equatorial climes, but I suspect that the retail operators here in Ireland will have to eventually pay up. It's just a question of getting that mechanism right, which is obviously something that's very complex indeed.
We might come back to what would be done with that money, but I'm afraid for this evening, there we have to leave it.